ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। यत्प्रसादयुत भागलेशाम् अन्ये च देवा गुरवो जना स्वयम् कर्तुं समेता प्रभवन्ति पुंसास् तमीश्वरं त्वां शरणं प्रपद्ये। Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. Neither all the demigods, nor the so-called gurus, nor all other people, either independently or together, can offer mercy that equals even 1/10,000 of yours. Therefore, I wish to take shelter of your lotus feet. Purport. It is said, कामाइस तैस्तैर ऋतज्ञान प्रपद्यन्ते अन्य देवताः। पीपल इन जनरल बीइंग मोटिवेटेड बाय मटेरियल डिजायर्स वर्शिप द डेमिगॉड्स टू गेट फ्रूटिव रिजल्ट्स वेरी क्विकली। पीपल जनरली डू नॉट बिकम डिवोटीज ऑफ लॉर्ड विष्णु सिंस लॉर्ड विष्णु नेवर बिकम्स द ऑर्डर सप्लायर ऑफ हिज डिवोटी। Lord Vishnu does not give a devotee benedictions that will create a further demand for benedictions. By worshipping the demigods, one may get results. But as described in Bhagavad Gita, antavattu phalam te sham tad bhavati alpamedhasam. Whatever great benedictions one may achieve from the demigods are all temporary. Because the demigods themselves are temporary. The benedictions are also temporary and have no permanent value. Those who aspire for such benedictions have a poor fund of knowledge. Tad bhavati alpa medhasam. The benedictions of Lord Vishnu are different. By the mercy of the Lord, of Lord Vishnu, one can be completely freed from material contamination and go back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, the benedictions offered by the demigods cannot compare to even 1/10,000th of the Lord's benedictions. One should not, therefore, try to obtain benedictions from the demigods or false gurus. One should aspire only for the benedictions offered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita 18.66, सर्वधर्मान् परित्यज्य मामेकं शरणं व्रज अहं त्वां सर्व पापेभ्यो मोक्षयिष्यामि मा शुचः। Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. This is the greatest benediction. Neither all the demigods, nor the so-called gurus, nor all other people, either independently or together, can offer mercy that equals even 1/10,000th of yours. Therefore, I wish to take shelter of your lotus feet. We have been hearing the prayers of Satyavrata Maharaj as he is beholding with great awe and reverence the splendorous form of this most beautiful incarnation as a fish. Even though Krishna has come as a fish, he is of course still very, very, very beautiful because that is his intrinsic quality. He can take any form, however ugly externally looking it may be. But because the Lord is in that form, that quality manifests through any body he takes. He still remains very beautiful. That aspect of his beauty cannot be taken away from him, no matter what the form. and here Siddhartha Muni is offering his prayers with great sense of discrimination. Discrimination is a very, very important quality in our spiritual pursuance. There are many spiritualists all over the world. Not everyone is chasing after the hedonistic pleasures of material life. There are people who are aspiring for higher things, knowing the fallacy and futility of gross sense gratification. Unfortunately, because they lack this true quality of discrimination, they fall a prey to worshipping anything or anyone without true understanding. So Siddhartha Muni's, Siddhartha Maharaj's prayer help us to understand that whom to approach and why to approach. There are two questions. Of course, we have to approach someone. Like Giriraj Maharaj, His Holiness was speaking yesterday beautifully in the evening, that through his study also of Eastern philosophy, he understood that you have to approach somebody. You cannot be just, you know, you can say, I'm a self-made man on the material side. I'm self-made. No, how can anyone be self-made? Nobody can be self-made. You depend on food from the trees. So you do not make the food. So you depend on the trees for maintaining yourself. So how are you self-made? You didn't walk on the roads which you made. You walk on the road which somebody else made for you. You didn't make your own road. You don't make the trains which you travel by. So nobody is self-made. We're completely dependent on so many things outside. Nobody is self-made. It's a fallacy. It's pride. It's nonsense. Nobody is self-made at all. Even this body is not yours. You have not made the body. Even the body has been given to you by your parents as gifted by material nature. So anyway, nobody is self-made. But at least in spiritual terms, also it is clearly understood that you have to approach someone. That even a neophyte spiritualist understands, as so many in the West understood during those historical times in the 60s, you had to approach a guru. And there were so many thousands and thousands upon them were all searching. Who is my master? Who can be my perfect master? So yes, you have to approach someone. That's the beginning. But then whom to approach and with what motivation to approach. Those two things will determine the ultimate outcome of your approach. What happens ultimately will depend on these two things. What is your motivation and whom are you approaching? So here Satyavrata Maharaj is talking about different types of people with people generally approach. The general mass of people approaches gurus, commonest thing to do. Then they approach the demigods, very, very common to do, right? Or they may approach people in general, it's Prabhupada says here, janaha, just anybody. There's a very strange QR news I just read yesterday that in Bengal, and there are these big festivals take place, there are villages, there are a lot of beggars there. And the beggars receive a lot of donations because they beg. And now the beggars have started giving loans. Because they have so much money that, they give an interest rate lower than the money lenders give. So on an average, that guy may earn about 10,000 rupees a month. And the beggar is saying that, I don't need so much money. You know, a beggar, what is his needs? He may not even have a house. He may not even have electric bill to pay. He may be robbing it from somewhere else's. Stealing the electricity from somewhere. And he eats some simple food. 10,000 rupees is a big amount for a beggar. So they give loans. Imagine, beggar giving loans. So the people may approach anybody in general. This is janaha for some money. Even a beggar can give it. So they may approach a bank for a loan. These are also people in general. Some financial institute. Everyone approaches these days. They have to approach someone. Even for a material survival, you have to approach someone. Practically, no businessman runs his business by his own money. There are thousands of businessmen in this world. Nobody is spending his own money. Everyone is doing business from borrowed money, somebody else's money, bank's money or somebody else's money. Right? So they have to approach someone. But it is so surprising to find that actually there are such few people in the world who actually can give something of value. What are the most common things which people give? These gurus, so many of them are there, so many went to the West. What can they give? They can give health. They can give health. They can ask you to practice some yoga practices and meditation, which can give some sense of health, some sense of peace. What else they can give? They can give mystic powers. They can help you levitate. That means if I'm giving a class now, I can, rather than sitting on this and spoiling the beautiful, nice tapestry, I can sit 3 feet above and speak to all of you. But that has got no value. What is the value of levitation? Even if you can fly, what is the value of that flying? Even a small insect can do that, right? Even a mosquito can fly. So if you can also fly, you are no better than a mosquito. Right? Or even an aeroplane flies. So what's so great? So this flying and all this mysticism, it is so, people get impressed by that. Lack of discrimination. What is really of value? Someone will touch your eyes and give you eyesight. Yes, there is some value there. You can see something there. So we are not saying that everything they give is useless. There may be some value there of whatever people are giving. But the analysis here is what is of ultimate value. Because Bhagavatam never settles down for anything mediocre. We are in a line of thought, line of teaching, where nothing mediocre is given any value. Everything is superlative. Supreme personality of Godhead. No personality, not any personality. Supreme. Everything is superlatively given. So nothing mediocre is being offered here in the Bhagavatam. So then this helps readers to understand that yes, maybe I can go to the demigods because give something higher. And there are how many of them? There are 33 crores of demigods who can give so much. Right? And there are Vedas which describe how to approach them. So many people, even the Brijbasis, up till recently, they're all sort of devotees of Indradev. That is our tradition. There's nothing wrong in that. Nothing wrong in approaching the demigods for material, this thing. As long as you understand that it comes from the Supreme. So when that thing is lacking, Krishna had to intervene. But yes, it has been our tradition in our Vedic culture to approach demigods. And they can give so much also. In fact, each one of them has a different portfolio. They are specialists. Like you have ENT specialist. Then you have cardiologist. So then somebody is specialist in giving husbands. So you can give, approach Uma Devi. Somebody is specialist in giving good wives. Like that. So Shivji is there. So you can have to approach different people for different things. If you're a very good husband, we approach ladies, usually go, young ladies, girls, not ladies, girls. They'll go and offer milk and belpatra to Lord Shiva. Right? And they do that. And they hope that, give me a husband which is as great as you. During Nimai's time also, you know, remember this, when Nimai Pandit also was there, all these young girls of Navadeep were worshipping Lord Shiva. And our Nimai Pandit would go there and said, you worship me. You worship, better worship me. If you don't do that, I'll curse you. To have a husband who has got, you know, 7 co-wives. Then you take the garland, put it around his neck, and whatever food was there, you don't take it. He just loved the Dhamvasis of Navadeep. Even they did not want to worship him, he sort of forced his own worship out of his own love for them. So up till recent time also, people are worshipping, you know, demigods for husbands and wives. So this is there. Now we'll have Ganesh Chaturthi coming. It's a few days, right? It's already started? No. It's coming, I think. So, how many devotees of Ganesh ji are there? So many of them. Thousands upon thousands of them are there. So among the demigods, of course, there are only few pure devotees of the Lord. Most of them are mixed devotees. So when a person goes to a demigod or anyone, the transaction which takes place, someone is asking and somebody else is giving. So there's a receiver and there's a giver. So there is a transaction of give and take. Now what really takes place as transaction depends on two very important factors. What transpires in exchange. And that one is the motivation of the person who's asking. And the glory and motivation of the person who is giving. So we will examine this. Like Ravan or Hiranyakashipu. What is their motivation? Their motivation is to become powerful and control the world, control people and have tremendous power to enjoy. This is their motivation. So they will go with that to Lord Shiva. Right? And Shiva, of course, gives them in return to a particular exchange. There is an exchange currency. There's a currency of exchange. That currency could be tapasya. So you offer a particular level of tapasya and that acts as a currency to buy from that giver some commodity like a mystic power. So mystic power available also at a price. But not money, but the purchase power is of the tapasya or a yagya. A yagya also is a type of currency which gives you purchasing power. You can do a yagya and please Chandika. With Indrajit, the great in the war, in this very powerful war of Ramayana, he's an extremely powerful mystic yogi, Indrajit. And he was worshipping, Kal Bhairavi. And he was getting such tremendous powers which we cannot even imagine. Let us not underestimate the power of these great demigods. They are very powerful. And he was worshipping Sakshat, material energy herself in the form of Kal Bhairavi. And he had powers which, you know, would make him invincible. Imagine, invincible. And even Ram was concerned. What happens if this, you know, as a part of the Leela, of course. But he's concerned that if he does his yagya, he fulfills his yagya, then he gets a chariot which becomes invincible. And as long as he's on that chariot, no power in the world can ever kill him. Nobody. He's inconquerable. He becomes like practically Ajita. No one can become victorious over him. So after many of the, commanders are dead, Indrajit goes once, knocks off Lakshmanji, and thinks he is victorious. But then he finds that Lakshmanji is back after the Nagpash has been removed by Garudji. He says, "Oh, he's come back. I thought he is dead because till morning, if this Nagpash is not tampered with, it just sucks away your life force from you. And the person has to die. A horrible death." But somehow Hanumanji went to Garudji, convinced him and brought him here, and Garudji came and the snakes went away. So then Lakshmana understands that this is not an ordinary war, said Indrajit. So then he does this Nikumbila. Her name is Nikumbila. That particular form is called Nikumbila Devi. And he's chanting his tantric mantras and all that. And he's completely guarded off. No one can enter that cave. And he's all through the night he's doing that. But Vibhishan knows the secret. He said, if he does this, it's become very difficult for us to. So Vibhishan tells Ram, Lakshman, would attack him now. So they go and attack. And the yagya is not over. And he's forced into a war before the yagya gets over. Right? So this type of mystic powers are there, which all these people knew how to become extremely powerful. Of course, in the end, Indrajit, who had overcome Indra, that's why it's called Indrajit, was destroyed by Lakshman because he had the power of asceticism. He had not slept for 14 years in the service of Ram and Sita. So the power of asceticism was there with him, and therefore he could overcome. So there is tremendous power in these. They had this knowledge. They had the knowledge to prove. So here we can say, highly motivated. highly selfish and highly cruel, envious people were there who approached these demigods most of the time. As Prabhupada says, that the more they get, the more they keep, they want to have more. This is the nature of, typically of material desires. That one quality which is there is that they are never satiable. This is a typical quality of material desires. That no matter how much it is endeavor to satisfy, it never gets satisfied. It is like always like a fire. There is a, is fire ever quenched by putting fuel into it? No. No. You put fire, put fuel into the fire, it has to increase. So the materialist is making a severe mistake. He wants to become happy. He wants to become really enjoy life. But he's making a severe major blunder in his thinking process, that he's trying to satisfy his material desires by chasing after them. And the small but important error he is making is that he does not realize that he is not this body. It's a very crucial paradigm required there to understand that he is not this body. So if as long as he is this body and this material mind, he's trying to satisfy that, has no. But as Prabhupada says here, when you think you are the body, then you approach the demigods. But when you think you are the soul, usually don't approach the demigods. Very important description comes in. If you think you are the body, then I have material desires, and you are a powerful materialist, the demigods, let me approach them. But when you are pursuing a path where you realize that I am not this body, but I am a spirit soul, then you no longer approach the people who are in temporary bodies. Because you know that whatever you will get from them will ultimately be only temporary. When Muchunda Maharaj was serving the demigods, huge war, at that time even the kings from the earth planet were recruited to fight for demigods. They were so powerful. So he fights for demigods for a long time. And then he's successful along with the demigod army to subdue the demons, said, ask for benediction. This whole today's section of discussion is about benedictions. So ask for a benediction. Varmango. Ask for anything you want except liberation. Make it very clear to him what to ask. Because they know that they have limitations. Demigods all know their limitations. So the demigods can give everything under the sun, and the ceiling is what? Anything less than liberation. Anything less than liberation they can give. And that's a lot. That's a lot. That's something very long life, millions of years, whatever you want, opulences, take it, it's all there. But as Prabhupada explains nicely, when you come to Vishnu, there's a big difference. He gives not what you ask. In fact, most of the time, he will not give what you ask. Demigods, what you ask, they will give. But Krishna, being independent, that is his quality. Why is not giving what people are asking? The demigods are bound by this factor of being dependent. So what they ask, they have to give. So they cannot exercise their own choice in the regard. Even if Lord Shiva is being asked, for a boon to, my Vrikasur, knowing, see, Shivaji is not a crazy person, as sometimes thought. He's an extremely intelligent person. He's in fact the most intelligent person. He's made the whole creation. His wife is Durga. Right? So he's not crazy to give, somebody a benediction that if you put your head over anybody else, you will crash into 1,000 pieces. But he's giving it to this nonsense fellow, Vrikasur, because there is an element of being bond in his role of being a demigod. Because he also has that amsha of him, which is Shivji as a demigod, Shivji as a Vaishnav, Shivji as a destroyer. He has got different aspects. So when Shivji acts in a demigod mold, with a demigod hat, then he has to give, even though the one is asking something nonsense. But Vishnu has only one hat, that he is always independent. Is never, ever, ever, ever bound by any laws, any bondage. He's completely Swarat. So if Dhruva Maharaj asked him for a kingdom more than his father, the great-grandfather, That means asking something more than what even Brahma has got. Now imagine a boy of 5 years asking, now this is the limits of somebody who can ask something. There's no example of I know. This is something higher than even Hiranyakashipu actually. Hiranyakashipu with all his fierce intelligence could ask for the universe. But here, Dhruva, this boy, is asking for a kingdom greater than possessed by Brahmadev. Wow, this is like, you'll get stumped when you ask this. Wow, is there anything beyond that? It's an extremely superlative demand from a young boy with intense determination to achieve it. Fierce determination. And of course, the Lord comes. And who intervenes? This is the crucial factor that even though you may have material desires, the person who intervenes is a pure devotee, then things can change. Right? So Girirat Maharaj went to become God, but is intervened by Prabhupada. When Prabhupada intervened, he said, I want to become a servant of God. There was a change. Right? So Dhruva Maharaj also similarly, he went with a desire, but somebody intervened. And things changed. Right? So most of the time, people who are there outside in this world, unless they get an intervention of a pure devotee, things don't change. That contact, that one point contact with a pure Vaishnava is the most important milestone in the spiritual journey of the spirit soul. Because things always change after that and never before. Never before. Either we can have personal contact with a pure devotee or his book or his prasad which he has arranged through Rath Yatra, whatever else. But that contact with a pure devotee through his extended mercy or himself personally is the most important factor. And in our lives also, all of us who are sitting in this room, now we can all know that it was some devotee, it was some Prabhupada's compassionate servant who came into our lives, right? Either he gave us a book or gave us some knowledge, or whatever. So we got in contact with Prabhupada's servant and then things changed. Before that, we all may have tried so many things. Read this book, that read book, gone to this demigod, gone to that demigod, this temple, that vrata, this upvas, so many things. But nothing seems to have worked to give us anything high than just mediocre things. Now, so Dhruva Maharaj approaches, when Dhruva Maharaj approaches the Lord, then when he sees the Lord, then he's completely satisfied. So the thing is, what does a spirit soul actually need? Let's come to that point. Indraji is asking for a chariot or invincibility, or people asking for money and health. What do we actually need? What is our deepest need? And that comes as a very powerful statement by George Harrison. This great Vaishnava, Prabhupada's strong follower. He sponsored the book for Prabhupada in terms of printing. £19,000 he gave to print Krishna book. And the first line he writes, when I read that line, it struck me. I hope it always strikes me till the last point of my life also, that everyone is looking for Krishna. Wow. What a line. It says it all. You know, looking for money, name, fame, power, sex, this, that. Yes, people are looking for so many things. But actually, what are we looking for? Deep inside. And this very highly intelligent musician with his tremendous penetration power and understanding life and music through his God-given potencies, and maybe from his previous life, Prabhupada said he was a musician in his past life also. But through all that, after meeting Prabhupada, he realized that everyone is looking only for Krishna. Even the ant, even the mosquito. In all our loving dealings with people also, we're looking only for Krishna. Even animal life, there is a family. Even a dog has a family, a pig has a family, a crow has a family. So that loving exchange which you're looking for, even in any species, actually is looking for Krishna's love. Coming in a very infinitesimal manner through a fellow crow or a fellow dog. But it's Krishna's love which is there inherent in the heart of that dog, but the other dog is reciprocating with. And he's feeling that this is life. This is nice. I have a nice dog. So to love and to be loved is the deepest need of the soul. I was seeing an interview by Radhanath Swami Maharaj, which he on Fox News in Seattle a few days back. A short interview regarding his book, and the interviewer, this nice lady and gentleman, were asking questions to Maharaj. So then he asked some, you know, anecdotes of his book and like that, and said, "Swami, can you tell us, Swami Radhanath, so can you tell us, you know, what is the message to the people? What is the message? Nice question. And what is your message? What do you have to tell? What is?" And Maharaj, in just 1.5 minute, is concisely encapsulating the essence of spirituality. That was beautiful to see. I can't repeat his words. But we heard him say many times this over years, so sort of we understand the mood of what he's saying. He said, this is the need. Everyone is looking for love. To love and to be loved. And then actually, to invoke that love which is within your very heart, to access that love which is already in your heart, and you get access to that by chanting the name. So he gives a beautiful, nice, small thing, but it's really the essence of bhakti. It's very beautiful to see how nicely he could, communicate eloquently the essence of spiritual life. So yes, this the need to love is the deepest thing. And of course, it all comes from Krishna. Because even though Krishna is one sense, in his Paramatma feature, is Atmaram, but he also hankers for love, and to love and to be loved. If he doesn't get his mother's milk, he cries. What does that mean? He's hankering for the love of Mother Yashoda. Without that, he cries. If he does not see Srimati Radharani for a short time, then he faints in her memory. So he cannot live without Srimati Radharani's pure love. So it is all coming from Krishna, that Krishna also hankers for his devotee's love, and he's going to do anything in reciprocation for devotees he loves. Right? So this exchange of Krishna receiving love from his devotees and giving love to his devotees is the essence of Krishna consciousness. And then when it comes to all of us on a more spirit soul level, the same thing applies. That we also hanker for Krishna's love as coming from his devotees, and we want to exchange love with his devotees. So the give and take, rasaswada, this exchange of love between devotees of the Lord, is the same thing which Krishna is responding to his devotees. So that is a parallel we have to draw and understand, that it's all coming from Krishna. So unless when the devotees are in a very nice environment of love and concern, then as Prabhupada said, they feel completely satisfied. They feel completely satisfied. No one ever wants to go outside. Even the material world is very tempting. Very tempting. You see a nice girl on the road, you want to look at her again. And there are so many billboards which attract us, and so many things attract us. A lot of people are living in, moving in nice, beautiful cars, and say, "Oh yeah, nice car. Yeah, wish I had that." You see nice mansions and this and that. You know, this now next road there is a big building going to come up. I don't know when. Said even buildings more beautiful than all that are there in South Mumbai also. Right? They've given a plaque like that. So you know it's going to be like a palace or something. What God knows, but can't be better than this. If they make a big one, you know, it can't be better than this one, right? This is better than not in South Bombay. It's better than anywhere in the world. This is gold. This is Krishna's house. So, yes, how are we all able to resist these temptations of this world, which are so intense and strong upon our consciousness, constantly bombarding it through billboards and televisions and newspapers and people? Because we have a very strong, loving bond of exchange with Krishna's devotees. That is Krishna's shelter. What is spiritual soul ultimately looking for through this love? When you say he's looking for love, right? Now through this love, what really happens? What is the outcome of this love? He feels a sense of complete shelter. When a child receives mother's love, what happens? Is the love in itself? No. The love is a means of feeling complete shelter. When the child is in the lap of the mother and sucking the mother's milk, it feels completely secure in his mother's love, loving embrace. Similarly, when we are in a nice harmonious relationship with Krishna's devotees, and we are exchanging that love in a sense of being completely selfless, I don't want anything from the devotees. I want to only serve the devotees. And they don't want anything from me for what I am. But they're doing whatever they're doing to me because of their love for me. When that sort of atmosphere prevails in any community of the world, then the participants of that particular exchange will feel a sense of complete shelter. Complete shelter. And they will never, ever, ever go out to anything of the world because it is only a pale imitation in the name of love. It's a false promise of Maya. They can see it very easily. When there's, even in the material sense, if the husband and wife relationship, there's a very congenial relationship between husband and wife, and both of them are actually good harmonious relationship, then however beautiful another girl is, or however beautiful another handsome man is, they may appreciate that beauty and the good qualities, fine, there's a very nice handsome man, beautiful lady, fine, but that will never deviate them from their relationship because they're completely satisfied as husband and wife in their loving exchange. When they're not satisfied, there's conflict, there's quarrel, and you look outside. Something is better outside. You go for it. But if you are happy here, you don't go outside. So this is what we are getting. So Krishna is called as Varadraj. In Vishnu form. He is the one who gives the best benediction. He is the king among benedictors. So when Krishna comes in this world, of course people go to Krishna for asking, but we must understand that Krishna actually comes here to give. He came as Matsya Avatar to give what? To give shelter to the Vedas. To protect them so that through the Vedas he protects all people in general. He came as Lord Ram to do what? To give shelter to the people in this world by killing Ravan and other Daityas. He came as Krishna to do what? To give shelter from Kamsa and his party. And even he was not asked for this, but he just still gave it. He gave Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna is always on the giving side. He just gives and gives and gives. He's like the sun. The sun takes nothing. Does the sun take anything? Ever? Sun just constantly just gives and gives and gives and gives light. So Krishna is Surya Sama. Krishna also is always giving. When he's playing his flute and is smiling, his smile is giving that radiance of love. Right? He's just giving, always giving. So Krishna is giving, and then when that same Krishna comes as the best giver, when Krishna came, he gave Bhagavad Gita, and then he gave this mandate also. What is this mandate? Sarva dharman parityaja, heavy mandate. Very heavy mandate. Come on guys, do this. Just surrender to me and I will deliver from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Actually, it's a lot of Krishna's love. It looks very heavy because we don't want to surrender. It looks very heavy. Surrender? Wow. Anything other than that, please. It looks very heavy mandate. But it's not heavy. It's just Krishna's love. He's asking, just do this simple thing. Just surrender to my desire. And I'll take care of all your problems. But Krishna realized that even this is so difficult for Kali Yuga people. It is so difficult to surrender. Therefore, he comes in an extra merciful form. Like you have extra large shirts, you know, like extra large, extra big. So extra, so that everyone can fit into that shirt. So extra large mercy. So that everyone can fit into that mercy. This mercy which he is giving us, this, you know, few people are few takers for that mercy. How many people can surrender? Even Kuresh was wondering, Ramanacharya, Gurudev, tell me, what does this mean? What is the meaning of surrender? I don't understand this sloka.
No, it was Dashrathi, Dashrathi. Dashrathi was thinking, Guru, they tell me, what is this surrender thing? So you go and serve with this lady in her village for 6 months. So then he realized, you know, what is surrender. So it's difficult for, even for great souls. But so Krishna realized that this sort of mercy is, there won't be much takers for this. So he came in an extra large merciful form. Extra large means, here is Prabhu. Krishna is Prabhu. Then he comes as Mahaprabhu. The great master. The great master. The great giver. Anarpita. Never given before. What he came to give was never ever ever given before in 8 billion years. $4 billion for a day and then for the night. So 8 billion. Right? 4.32 billion is one day and then night also is similar. So what was not given in 8.6 billion years, that he came to give. That in one day in the life of Brahma, this is available to the spirit souls. 8.6 billion years. You don't even understand what that means. For a tiny brain, that figure is too large to even comprehend and put into our small skull. What really? 8.2 billion? Is way beyond history, way beyond recorded time. But that's the type of mercy this person comes to give. He comes so rare, he comes. Infinitely rare person. Anarpita charim chirat. For a long time it wasn't given to anybody. Karunaya. Karunaya, mercy. So Yare says that not all the demigods or nor any other people in general can offer mercy. So here he has come to offer mercy. Karunaya, out of his mercy. Avtirna kalau. What has he come to give? He has come to give a type of love. We are talking about love. Bhakti is all about love. Pure love. His type of love, which is not the, which is a love which is of a very extremely pure nature. Now here Satyavrata Muni also loves Matsya Avatar, but you can see obviously a fish which is like 8 million miles long. You can only feel only one sentiment. What is that? Too much of reverence, right? Something which is so huge. You can only bow down your head and say, Namaskar, no, Tam Aham Prapadye. Huge, huge form of the Lord. You can only have one exchange. Because of his splendor and grandeur, it evokes only reverence. But even Krishna is a person, and he also does not just like people to come to him with this reverential love. He comes as Lord Ram. He said, Krishna was thinking, I came as a pillar. I didn't get any parents as Narsingadev. I didn't get muscular love from anybody. No, I cannot make my a pillar into my father or mother. So Narsingadev, he became a little dissatisfied. Because he didn't get that exchange. He got exchange with Prahlad as master and servant. But he didn't get any Vatsalya Prem. So he came as Lord Ram. Where he got that Vatsalya Prem from Dashrath and Kausalya Devi. And of course Kaikai also. Sumitra also. So then Ram was more happy because he's anchoring for love. And he's that love, of course, it's pure. It's very pure. It's not that it's impure love. This is all pure love we're talking about. But in spiritual life, we have everything superlative. Pure. What is that beyond pure? Purer. And then there is purest. This is too much. You cannot get more egoistic than this. What we have is the purest. This is the height of ego. So pure love. Dashrath's love for Ram is pure. Kausalya's love is pure. But love, in Krishna's own analysis, when it is mixed with this alloy, Prabhupada says the word alloy. The alloy of reverence comes in. Then that love becomes little weakened up. So even though that is being offered to the Lord, on the receiving side, the receiver of that love, Lord Ram, is not fully satisfied with that love. It's extremely satisfied, of course, very satisfied. with Kaushalya's love. But there is that slight thing. So when he comes as Krishna, then even removes that barrier. Everyone in Vrindavan couldn't care less that he's a god. What god? This is our friend. I'll wrestle with him. And he's not even stronger than me. I can defeat him also. Now no one dare talk this like this to Ram. And no one dare talk this to Narayan or Vishnu. Right? A wrestling match with Narayan, impossible. It's impossible. But then he removes the veneer of reverential love completely and comes forth in his natural form as God in his original natural form when God is at home. Krishna is God at home. And Vishnu and Narayana God at performing their various sort of duties. Of course, Krishna has no duty, but still duty of maintaining and creating like that. So this is God in his natural form. And therefore, every Brijbasi, every Gopa, every Gopi thinks he's our family member. So there is no reverence whatsoever. So that is the purest love. The love of the Brijbasis. We don't understand this. This is way beyond our... We can only speak about it or try to understand with our limited intelligence. How can a person who is filled with lust even talk or speak and understand this? It's not possible. But we can just have some reasonable intellectual conception and appreciate what we have been given by Prabhupada. That we can definitely do, even in our conditioned state right now. That what we are being offered on our pita is something very, very high. Something very exalted. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes, he comes to give this. So the most benefiting, the most benefactor is who? It's Krishna. As I said in the beginning, two things. The motivation of the receiver and the giver. Right? So, Krishna gives what we don't ask for. Dhruva Maharaj, of course, he asked for this. He gives something higher. He took him back to Godhead and then he gave him this Dhruva Loka. Dhruva Loka, which is even beyond his universe. But in one step, even higher than what Krishna can give, there is still exists something. And that comes from Krishna's devotee. Because Krishna can give what he has. But a pure devotee has, he has Krishna. So who's greater? Krishna as the all in all, or the one who has Krishna? Who's greater? The one who has the all in all is actually greater. So a prostitute comes to Haridas Thakur. Very low class lady with very dubious and devious motivations to destroy that pure name and fame of this great Acharya. So what is she approaching this person with? The desire to actually destroy his good character. But Namacharya has got Naam. And he offers that Naam, he offers his mercy in the form of that Naam to this lady. And she becomes converted in 3 nights. Just 3 nights of hearing from Acharya. She's transformed into a Param Vaishnavi. So what Krishna's devotee can give is something wonderful. Therefore, this mood of approaching a Vaishnava is important. When you approach a great soul, the spiritual master, the great souls, the pure Vaishnavas, the mood is given by the Acharyas. Which is the mood? Krishna se tomar, Krishna dite paro, tomara shakati ache, ami to kangal, Krishna Krishna boli, dhaitava pach. This is the mood that my dear master, my dear Param Vaishnava, I'm approaching you because you possess Krishna. The rare jewel of Krishna is with you. Krishna is your property. And as far as I'm concerned, this is the mood of the receiver. Only when he's in this mood can someone give him Krishna. You have to be nishkinchana to get Krishna. If you think we have something, we will not get Krishna. Even if you are chanting Hare Krishna mantra, we will not get Krishna in the form of pure love. If you think we have something. Kunti Maharani's prayer stands supreme. That when we think that we don't have, then. Therefore, Bhaktivedanta Maharaj wrote not one or two, but 6 volumes of books, all entitled what? No one ever wrote a book like this. This is a rare type of book series. The books are called as Beggar. The Beggar series. Now, whoever wrote books on begging, and how can it be a good book to write about? But such a great Vaishnav is teaching us all that this is the best mood when you approach Krishna's devotees and Krishna. You go in the mood of a beggar. Krishna se tomar, Krishna dite paro, you can give, dite means you can give. Tomara shakati ache, it is within your power to give him to me. Amito kangal. You have to go like this. That we did in our, on a day of Diksha, right? When we had a Diksha done, then we went with our Harinam Chadar and said, today I took Diksha, please, can you give me some donation? Like that, we just went like that once in a life. With some humility we went there because we are so affected by that moment of Diksha. But this is the mood of a devotee, to actually beg. And when he begs, and Rupa and Sanatana were begging like this, the humility was so great, the Mahaprabhu said, your humility itself is breaking my heart. You please stop begging now. You don't beg anymore. You don't speak now. The more you speak, my heart is breaking into a million pieces. Mahaprabhu was crying, tears of love. That was the intense begging mood. He said, even Haridas, even Jagai and Madhai were better than us. Because they didn't serve mlechhas and yavanas, but we served nabos and shavus. So they were in such a state of humility. And of course, Mahaprabhu accepted them as his associate. So there is no higher giver than Mahaprabhu Chaitanya or Lord Nityananda. And they will end with this line of thought, this nice pastime of Mahaprabhu giving his mercy even to an insignificant puppy dog. The lowest species in Vedic culture is a chandal, because they eat dogs. And among all the animals, the lowest animal is a dog. But even to an insignificant puppy dog, Mahaprabhu gave his love. And what type of love? That even the Vaikunth Viman came and took him back to Godhead. And his deliverance of Jagai Madhai, of course, is a final proof. The final proof that even shocked the demigods. They were also givers. They said, what has he given? You know, so I'm given like this. So the demigods who give to everybody benedictions, this is wonderful. Great part of Kali Yuga. That people who are giving, people are asking demigods, all demigods are being approached. Demigods said, okay, it's finished, done, okay. We will itself go to this material world now. We will go to the lower planet. And we will beg. So the givers become beggars. So demigods also, who are always on the giving side, come on the receiving side when they come as? In the house of the Vaishnavas. Because they also want what Mahaprabhu is giving. They know in only one time, one lifetime of chanting, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram. Just one lifetime of chanting purely, without offense, is sufficient to take us back home, back to Godhead. This is the mercy of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, as carried forth to all of us by the most merciful servant of theirs in the form of Srila Prabhupada. This is what we have all got. This is the mercy which we all have got. The more we realize our good fortune, the more we share this good fortune with others, our life is perfect. Hare Krishna. It's quite late. We won't take questions now. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.